It's time for All Things Gardening with Charlie Nardozzi. Hey there, Charlie.
Hi, Mary.
Well, just around the corner from my house, there is a neighbor who has been growing the most gorgeous flowers in their front lawn. I'm so envious of them. It's taken a lot of self-control to not just go over and start harvesting some of the flowers. And I found out that they are zinnias. I love them. I love the color. I love the height. I love everything about the look of them. You've got a ton of information about how we can choose some zinnia plants and also even do some seed saving.
Yes, even though it's tempting to cut your neighbor's zinnias, you probably should ask first. But this is a great time of year to do a little zinnia evaluation. What that means is that take a look at some of what your neighbor is growing or your family or your friends are growing and see what varieties they have and make note of those for next year, because this is a good time of year to kind of see how beautiful all the different types are and then decide which ones you want to grow next year and maybe even save some seeds. So let me just do a little variety selection of some of the zinnias. Zinnias are an amazing plant. They start with the little Persian carpet zinnia, which is just a little bit of a flower on a nice sized plant. And then there's some button zinnias that look like they have tons of petals all rolled up into a button-shaped flower. They come in a variety of colors. Then you get the bigger ones, like you were seeing, Mary, you know, the ones that are 3-4 feet tall, like State Fair and Benary Giants, and some of those types. And those are beautiful single or double flowers. There are some that are disease-resistant. The Oklahoma series is a good one if you have problems with powdery mildew. And there's one that I really like. We grow it. It's an orange one that looks like Medusa's hair. It's called a cactus zinnia. Just crazy, wild type of zinnia. And then there are some that don't even look like zinnias, like the profusion zinnia series. Those look like little daisy flowers on little mounding plants. So decide which ones you really like. Make note of those. If they are heirlooms, like the State Fair or the cactus type or that button type I mentioned, you can save the seeds of those and then grow them next year. But the way to do it is to cover a flower that's just opening now with a bag and keep it covered all the way through its life cycle until it starts drying off. Then you can cut it off, let the seeds dry indoors, and then store them all winter. Start them maybe about 4 weeks before the last frost indoors next year, and then you'll have those varieties in your home. So zinnias are great.
Do you think my neighbor will notice if I go over in the night and like wrap a plastic baggie around one of the flowers?
Well, you could share seed. That would be the way to go.
Okay, question time. This actually is a question from two different listeners with a similar issue. This first is from Clover in Jericho. Clover writes, I always get early blight on my tomato plants, and I think it must be in my soil from past years of poor garden cleanup. Am I doomed, or is there a way to get rid of it? And then the second question from Trisha in Middlebury. Trisha writes, what's the best way to prepare the soil for next spring in my raised beds after cleaning out the blight disease tomato vines? I pull all of them out and put them into the trash, but I'm concerned that the microbes or spores or cooties will stay in the soil and reinfect next year's crop.
Yeah, both are great questions and very pertinent to this time of year. So as your tomatoes are winding down, what I would suggest is cut them down right at the soil line and remove them from the garden. So any of that material, whether it be leaves or old fruit, try to get all of that out of the garden, because that could be places where it would be harboring the disease for next year. Then the other thing you want to do is make sure when you plant next year, you don't plant in that same bed. If you can, rotate your crops around. Add some compost to that bed, cover it over with a mulch of hay or straw or chopped leaves to protect that soil in the winter. And then next year, what you'll want to do is also look at some of the disease-resistant varieties. There are some that are late and early blight, tolerant if not resistant, such as Matt's Wild Cherry, Defiant, and Iron Lady. So take a look at some of those varieties, and that will probably help you next year keep your fruits growing strong and get more fruits with less disease.
And Charlie, I understand you have a webinar coming up.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. It's called the Growing Flowering Vines Webinar. So as many of you know, I do webinars, two or three of them every year. And this one I'm doing on October 7th at 7 p.m. And it's all about flowering vines. So from the annual vines, like the sweet peas and the morning glories and the cypress vine, to perennial vines like Mendevilla and clematis, to the woody vines like climbing hydrangeas, trumpet honeysuckle, and trumpet flowers, trumpet vines. So if you're interested in any of those types of vines, growing them, how to grow them, how they grow, I'm going to cover all of that information and talk a lot about the individual vines, how to prune them and take care of them. So check it out on the All Things Gardening website. We'll have a link there. It's called Growing Flowering Vines on October 7th. If you can't make it on the 7th, I'll record it. And if you sign up, you'll get a copy of that recording.
And for more info and resources, you can listen again to this broadcast and check out All Things Gardening's podcast, wherever you get podcasts. If you'd prefer to read all about it, try the web post at vpr.org. That also will include that link that Charlie mentioned, and also a link where you can send your gardening questions. Thanks so much, Charlie.
You're welcome, Mary, and I'll be seeing you in the garden.